Book Friends Forever, Episode 5. Hi, I'm Alvina Ling.
And I'm Grace Lin.
And we're Book Friends Forever.
We're childhood friends that grew up to be...
a children's book editor.
And an author and illustrator.
Welcome to Episode 5. Every week we catch up on each other's lives, talk about what's on our minds, take a trip down memory lane, and share with each other what we're grateful for. So, Grace, I think I have a little bit of an idea, but how was your week?
Well, my week was pretty awful because I was sick almost the whole week. If any of the listeners of this podcast listen to my other podcast, Kid Lit Women, the one that I actually produce, they'll not hear my voice because I didn't have one this whole week. They'll actually hear your voice. You had to take over for me for the intros <Yeah. laughs> because I had laryngitis until about yesterday. So it's been a rough week for me.
Well, I'm glad your voice is back. We're recording this later in the week because of that. So we normally try to record on Mondays, but we're actually recording on Friday. So it's nice to talk to you and catch up and be able to hear your voice.
Well, how was your week?
I had a really busy week. It was our sales conference week. And we have sales conference twice a year because at Little Brown and at Hachette, we have two seasons. And sales conference is kind of like the final and big launch that we do of our list. This was our fall 19, winter 20 season. We basically present it to our sales reps and they try to get everything they need to turn around and sell into accounts like Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all the indies. So it's a big deal, and there's a lot of preparation for it and a lot of meetings. On Wednesdays, we do a meet and greet with authors, usually about 6 divisions. We have a guest author, and this year our guest author was Chris Colfer, who wrote The Land of Stories and is an author that I work with. I had to introduce him, which is really fun, and even though we've actually been publishing him for 8 years, he's never been a guest at our sales conference.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that was nice. We had invited him when we were launching The Land of Stories, but back then, and I had forgotten this, that was during the second or third season of Glee. So he really didn't have much time to get away. But it was actually really nice because we're launching a new series with him. So the fact that he could come and be our guest and we can celebrate the success of his previous books and then launch a new book was actually really great.
So the thing about the sales conference is that it's not just Little Brown for young readers. It's all different divisions, like adult.
Yeah, it's all of Hachette Book Group. But usually there are 6 major divisions. And every now and then we might actually have one of the publishers that we distribute. So, for example, we distribute Disney. So there have on occasion been an author guest from Disney, but rarely. And it's a nice mix of authors.
So for people who are listening to this who don't quite understand what the sales conference is, so what it is all the divisions of Hachette, including the adults and Faith Words and all those, they each choose an author that they want to kind of highlight, and the author comes to the sales conference and speaks. Is that right?
Right. I mean, the sales conference itself happens, you know, each division is separate, and, you know, we present our list separately. And then on Wednesday afternoon, we all gather where we invite the whole office to come and hear. And yeah, every division has a different author. So this year, oh gosh, I won't be able to name all the authors, but I guess a good sampling is Little Brown Adult had Malcolm Gladwell, who wrote The Tipping Point. He has a new book coming out this fall. He actually commented that the last time he spoke at sales conference had been 20 years ago for his first book. We had Adam Rippon, who is an Olympic ice skater, and he is writing a memoir for Grand Central Publishing. And then we had some debut authors from Faith Words and Orbit, and then our guest was Chris Colfer. So it was a nice mix of debuts and celebrities and...
It's always kind of a weird mix, though. I feel like you'll have a debut author, and then you'll have like Whoopi Goldberg. So I think it's really interesting.
And
how
Whoopi
do you guys
Goldberg
choose?
Was a guest.
I know.
I know. I have to say the most surreal one that I've ever been at was Tom Wolfe and Michael Bolton and Libba Bray. And Dan Rather might have been in that one, or maybe he was in a different one. But anyway, so that was a little surreal. you know, I'm actually, to be honest, I'm not involved in choosing. That is our, you know, our publisher in accordance with publicity and marketing. They'll take a look at the season and which authors. And if there is a big launch of a celebrity book, we will often ask that celebrity first, because whenever we publish celebrity books, it's important for the sales force and then also accounts to know that that celebrity is committed to promoting the book. They give a 5 to 7 minute talk, and then we have a meet and greet afterwards where, you know, there's cocktails and food and everyone mingles and you meet. And so having that personal interaction is really important, whether you're a celebrity or not. But it's just an important way to connect. And, you know, if, say, the Barnes & Noble rep is really excited about your book and also excited about you and has met you and had a conversation with you, they can then, you know, when they're selling to Barnes & Noble, they can say, oh, you know, Chris Colfer is such a really funny, amazing guy, and he's, you know, he wants to do everything he can to get his books out there in the world. And you're just trying to find that anecdote mm-hmm. that can help the salespeople, you know, sell to their accounts, whether it's an independent bookstore or Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
So you must purposely kind of choose authors, though, that can speak well, though, right?
We do. Every now and then, you know, marketing will ask the editor and say, you know, we're considering this author as a guest. What do you think? And, you know, usually the editor will say, oh, that's a great idea. You know, based on my interactions with this author, I think they'd be great. But to be honest, and it's not everybody's expertise, and some authors, it might do the book a disservice, I think, to have an author speak at this conference, because again, they are speaking alongside, you know, say someone like Chris Colfer or Malcolm Gladwell. So,
or Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely want the author to shine. So if we feel like the author would be really uncomfortable or just nervous or not be able to do a great job, then we might pick someone else. So,
well, it's pretty intimidating. I mean, cause
it
I
is,
mean, I,
yeah,
I remember when I did it for, When the Sea Turns to Silver in 2016. And I remember I did it and it was Jake Tapper.
No, actually you did it for, you just did it for Big Moon Cave for Little Star.
Oh, that's right. I did for Big Moon Cake. I get confused. I did for Big Moon Cake for Little Star. That's right.
This is our trip down memory lane. Apparently, you don't remember.
I don't remember.
When you spoke at our sales conference.
But I don't remember what book it was for, but I do remember that it was Jake Tapper, one of the judges from So You Think You Can Dance, and it was a comedian from The Daily Show. And I remember, and also it was a Kennedy.
That was Caroline Kennedy.
Yes. And it was very intimidating, you know? And I remember thinking like, oh, okay, this should be interesting. And, you know, and it's a huge room, and I'm actually kind of used to talking to big groups and things, but it's just knowing that who comes before and after you. And I can see how it could be actually, for somebody who's not used to public speaking, how it could actually be a disservice.
Right, for sure. But you do never know. I mean, in the case of us inviting you, it was because we had been publishing you for a long time, but we were publishing a picture book by you for the first time. So we thought it would be a really nice opportunity to invite you. And, you know, everyone has been selling your books for a long time. Actually, very similar to Chris Colfer, because Chris Colfer had never been a guest because of his schedule. And so we're launching a new series in the fall. But you know, the sales reps have been selling his books for 7 years. So that was it was really good timing.
I was going to ask you, what author do you think has done the most amazing job?
Well,
I know it's not me. It's okay.
You were amazing, I will say. Because you prepare your talk. You deliver it really well. We had Samira Ahmed as our guest last in the fall. And we're launching her book, Internment, which is actually coming out, I think, next month. So that's her second book, but her first one with Little Brown. And it's about a tough topic. So, you know, it's about the United States, 5 minutes in the future. I mean, I hope much farther, but it seems like we're already there when Muslim Americans are forced into internment camps, you know, similarly to how Japanese Americans were forced into internment camps during World War II. So it's a really sober book. And Samira, you know, she got a standing ovation. And I'd never, wow. I've been at Hachette, well, I've been at Little Brown for 20 years now, and I've never seen a standing ovation at that event. It's just not that kind of event that usually has that kind of reaction. I mean, you know, obviously we have really amazing speakers there, but I think she, I don't know, she just did a great job of making it both personal but really powerful. And then she ended with a call to action, and I think that's what inspired people to get on their feet. But it was really great to watch. Have you ever gotten a standing ovation?
I have had standing ovations before.
Do you plan for them?
I don't plan for them, and it's always rather unexpected, and I'm always really, really touched when it happened. I remember one of our last conversations, you said that you don't think you're a speaker that will get a standing ovation. Why do you think that?
I don't know. I actually have been thinking a lot about the fact that I said that because I feel like my delivery is very kind of easygoing. And I think I'm a decent public speaker, but I don't think I'm a super powerful public speaker. I want to get a standing ovation before I die.
Well, I guess that's a good segment transition to what's on our minds then.
Yes. So I think what's been on both of our minds is public speaking. I think for me, because of Sales Conference, and also, you know, as mentioned previously, I recently did the New York SCBWI conference. I think it's fair to say that neither of us are natural public speakers, and yet we both have to do it all the time, right? And I having heard you speak in public, I know that you have worked really hard at it, and you are an amazing speaker, which is why when my division asked me if you would be a good guest at our sales conference, I said, absolutely. but yeah, how do you feel about public speaking in general?
I think it's so interesting because I think you're a much more natural public speaker than me. Like, I feel like I've never been a natural public speaker, and in fact, for me to become a public speaker, I almost had to like completely change my personality. Like, I really have had to work hard at it, you know, and I still am not a natural public speaker. Like, I can do speeches now, and I can do decent talks where I feel very proud of myself, but I'm not one that can stand up there and kind of like just talk off the cuff, you know, or like say something witty or something. Like, my speeches have to be prepared and practiced like over and over again beforehand. Like, for the sales conference, like I wrote every word out and I practiced it and practiced it and practiced it. I remember practicing with you the night before.
Yes, no, I do remember you practicing. So if you're giving a 5-minute speech, how long do you practice? How many hours would you say you practice?
I think for a 5-minute speech, it depends. It also depends on the audience too, right? Mm-hmm. And how much I'm riding on it. Like, if it's going to be school kids, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if it's going to be school kids and it's something like, oh, just talk for 5 minutes about why you wrote your book, you know, I can just kind of take a day and a half and just kind of write that ahead of time and think about it and like practice once or twice, right? Mm-hmm. But for the sales conference, like, to me, it was a really big deal. And I think I must have practiced for like a week, you know, ahead of time for that. You know, for the TEDx talk I did, which really kind of changed everything for me as a public speaker, I think that I practiced for months and months, like writing it all out, cutting it down, and like really, really winnowing that thing down, and really learning how to talk to people, like talk in the public. Like, that was a really great learning experience for me. And like I said, I think it changed everything for me as a public speaker. I think the worst advice I ever got from somebody was, they said, oh, don't practice your speeches. Then you sound so rehearsed and canned when you give it. So, like, I remember thinking that, like, oh, I'm going to sound so rehearsed and canned, you know. But honestly, it's so much better, because if I practice and practice ahead of time and I know the words that are supposed to come out, then I can relax and I can really like concentrate on what I'm talking about. Whereas if I don't practice, I'm so nervous about what I'm going to say that I stutter. So I think for me, just the kind of speaker I am, I have to practice ahead of time.
For me, it's similar in that it depends on the situation. But I think I'm pretty comfortable now for sure. But I was that kid who would give the oral report in class and would just start laughing uncontrollably because I was so so nervous. I mean, that seriously happened every time I had to give an oral report, and it was so mortifying and humiliating. And I just remember that. I mean, I was always terrified of public speaking all through high school. I had pretty low self-esteem, I will admit, when I was in high school, in that I didn't have confidence in, I don't know, in my future, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. And I thought, I don't know, I was thinking about careers, and I really had no idea. But I did love, I actually did like school, so I thought maybe I could be a teacher. But then I thought, I can't be a teacher because I can't stand up in front of a class and talk. That really held me back.
Interesting. And this is,
I know, this is, and, you know, we weren't, we were writing letters, I guess, back then, but we weren't really in touch. So I don't even know if I ever told you this, but what happened to change things for me is so random. But when I was in college, and then I was home for the holidays, and my father said, oh, you know, I invited someone to come speak at our house, and I invited some friends over, and, you know, it's just a presentation for this organization, and if you could, you know, be here for that, that'd be great. So I said, okay, sure. And it turned out it was this person who was coming from this organization called the Landmark Forum. Have you heard of this?
Uh-huh.
Did I tell you? Oh, yes, because you had a friend who also took it. So mm-hmm. when my father was, when we were living in Pittsburgh, and he had just started working a job, he wasn't getting along with some of his coworkers, and so his company sent him to this organization, and back then it was called EST, E-S-T, mm-hmm. and it changed my father's life. When I was growing up, my whole family was really affectionate. We hugged each other all the time. We said, I love you all the time. And my mom said that my father wasn't like that at first, and it wasn't until after he took this, it was like a 3-day seminar, he came home and he hugged her and said, I love you. And she was shocked. So I thought, oh my gosh, so this seminar really changed my father's life. So my father asked if I'd want to take it. And I'm like, sure, you know, I'm all about self-improvement. So I took this seminar, and you know, it's kind of a pyramid scheme, to be perfectly honest, because there are a lot of things you can get out of it, but they really try to get you to get all of your friends and family to join. But I did take, then the next course was called the advanced course, and I took the advanced course. And they had this thing where you had to write down who you are, who you stand for. And so I wrote down, who I am is the possibility for love and acceptance. And that is who I am. And then you had to get up on a stage in front of everybody and you had to say that. The second time I did it, something changed. Something clicked. And all of a sudden, I just wasn't afraid of public speaking anymore. And I really don't know how that happened. But
wow, that's pretty amazing.
In a way, that really changed my life. It did change my life, too. Yeah, I didn't. Thankfully, my parents paid for the seminar because they're actually really expensive. But I really think they got their money's worth because I think if I still had that fear, I definitely could not have succeeded as I have in publishing. And I didn't even know that publishing required so much public speaking, to be honest.
Oh my gosh. That's something that was a rude awakening for me, too. I mean, being in publishing, but as an author and an illustrator, like, when you go into it, you think you're just going to sit at your desk all day, and then realizing that so much of it is actually talking to people.
Right.
It's
you have
so
to interact
difficult.
With people. You have to give, I mean, you don't have to, but I do definitely think it really helps for sure.
Yeah, I guess you don't have to. I know there's some authors who have been able to eschew all of that, but mm-hmm. I feel like it's more of a hindrance if you don't. It's definitely a help if you can.
Right. I know when people ask me, you know, what surprises me the most or what surprised me the most when I started publishing about my job, and I'd always say just the amount of public speaking and selling that's involved, you know, in every step of the way. But, you know, for sales conference, I have to present our books, and you know, it's this formal conference room, and, you know, all the sales reps are in the audience, and, you know, might be 50 to 100 people, and you know, and you're presenting books that you love and you want them to love too, and But yeah, it's, and I do think it makes a big difference with how the editor presents your books. I remember going to a sales conference and just observing and mm-hmm. seeing the differences in terms of style and taking note and deciding, you know, I want my style to be more like this editor rather than this editor because,
Interesting. So give me some descriptors of what certain styles are and how you would describe your style that you're aiming for.
To be honest, most people are not really comfortable with public speaking because I flash back to high school and I flash back to junior high where I just start laughing or something. And I thought, well, if I have the script, at least, you know, worst comes to worst, I can just stand there and read the script, right? So it's kind mm-hmm. of my crutch. But in an ideal world, I don't actually read from the script. So I always have a script. But there are a lot of editors who will just read. And yes, they look up and, you know, make eye contact, but it's definitely not as effective as an editor who's sitting up there and just looking out at the audience and talking. And I can't do that for every book because, it depends on how many books I have to present and how, I don't know, and what I want to say about them. But that's the goal, is to sit out there, make eye contact, and just talk about the book and give them the tools that they need and the anecdotes that would help them to sell the book. The problem with sales conference and other meetings like that is that we have a limited amount of time to present all of our books. So, you know, each editor only has, say, a minute and a half per book. And so I can sit there and talk to someone about a book, no problem, right? But if you want to make sure to get everything you want to say within a certain minute, you know, period of time, you do have to write a script and try to stick to it and not stray too far. So I think that's the challenge. And so that's why a lot of editors do just read from their script. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's the best way to sell the book.
What I think is so interesting is that you went in and you watched other editors and you kind of said, okay, that's what I want to be like, and kind of aim for it, and you went for the goal. And I feel like what happened to me was almost the exact opposite. Like, I would go to see other authors talk and I would see like a Mo Willems, who's just, you know, amazing on stage. Like, I think he used to be a stand-up comic, right? And or our good friend Jarrett Krasoska, who are just, you know, natural speakers, like, mm-hmm. and who just seem to know how to communicate with a big audience when they're on stage. And I remember what finally freed me up was to say to myself, you know, I'm never going to be that kind of speaker. I can only be the kind of speaker I am. And so I think for me, it was like giving up on this idea that I was going to be this cool, off-the-cuff, witty speaker. And I was just going to sit and I was going to practice. I was going to have a rehearsed speech. I was going to talk. And I was just going to do the best I can. And I feel like it's worked really well for me. Like, I don't get a standing ovation all the time or anything like that. Like, and I don't know if I magically connect all the time. But every once in a while, I feel like all the stars align, like it's all in the right place, and that's when I get the standing ovation. Like, there's always like, versus yeah. like somebody who gets like standing ovations every time, or somebody who connects every single time. Like, I feel like I need a certain kind of magic for it all to line up, mm-hmm. but when it does, it's so satisfying, you know.
It really takes practice, and it also takes, you know, having all of those examples of, I gave this talk and it was really well received, therefore I know I can do it. You know, Chris Colfer, who is an actor and, you know, is used to performing in front of like stadiums, he gets super nervous, he told me, and it doesn't show at all. I mean, you know, maybe a tiny bit, but you know, I think no matter who you are. I'll share two anecdotes. One is the very first talk I had to give at a conference. It was the San Diego State University Writers Conference. And they actually tape, back then, I don't know what they do now, they tape record all the speakers and they actually sell the tapes to attendees.
Weird.
I know. So, but they would give you a tape. And I remember, I think it was actually the agent, Laura Rennert. I happened to be doing critiques and sitting next to her. And I said, oh, I'm never going to listen to this tape. And she said, you know, someone once recommended to me that I listen to my tape, and I'm going to say the same thing to you. I think you'll be surprised and you'll learn a lot. So I listened to the tape. And I think what for me was really eye-opening is when I gave the talk, I knew that my voice was trembling, you know, or mm-hmm. That I really felt that, and I could not hear it at all on the tape. And that also gave me a lot of confidence, because I realized, okay, I am super nervous on the inside, but it's not necessarily showing. So that gave me a lot of confidence. And then my other, I guess, conference example is one of the bigger SCBWI conferences I went to was in Seattle. I remember I had just bought Justina Chen's first novel, Nothing But the Truth and a Few White Lies. And so she was one of the organizers and they invited me. And I remember I looked at the schedule and I'd been to other conferences and had done, you know, workshops and that kind of thing. But on my schedule, it said I was giving a keynote, a morning keynote. And at that point, I was an associate editor. And I thought, why am I doing a keynote? Like, that must be a mistake. It must just be a talk. But it was the keynote. And I just, I don't know. I feel like it was one of those out-of-body experiences, but it just went so well. And everyone was laughing at the right places and everyone was cheering. And I don't think I got a standing ovation, but it was just one of those, it just, again, was a confidence booster. So I do think the more you do it, the more confident you feel, and then the better speaker you become. And a lot of it just takes... like that just takes practice. So now, you know, I've been at Little Brown for 20 years now, and I've done 40. Well, you know, I didn't present when I was an assistant, but you know, I've probably done at least 35 focus meetings. That's our launch meeting and sales conferences. So, I know I can do it. I don't prepare as much as I used to. I used to practice in front of a mirror.
Yeah. I feel like a little embarrassed because like I know some authors, especially, like, they'll give a different speech at every conference or every time they're asked. And I tend to do the same speech and mm-hmm. I feel bad about that. But and when I do a new speech, like I like slowly bring the new speech out, and like I practice that one over and over again, and then that becomes like another speech in my like repertoire, you know.
Well, I think you're an amazing public speaker, and I think that you also feel authentic.
It is authentic, you know. Like I guess that's what's so hard. It's hard to explain, is that even though it's so rehearsed and it's so practiced, it's still really authentic. It's realizing that for me to be authentic, I have to be able to have something practiced. This is so interesting. Whereas I think some people, to be authentic, it's got to come fresh out of the gut, you know?
All right. So this has been like a public speaking episode. As we always do, we like to close with what we're grateful for this week. So Grace, why don't you share what you are grateful for?
So let's see. I am grateful that I have my voice back and I can actually talk. And I'm grateful that, you know, I'm feeling healthy. Like I actually went for a run today, like the first time in like probably more than a week, because I've just been so sick. And you know, not like I said, I don't really love running, but after doing that run and like just being able to like breathe and like feel healthy, it was like such a nice feeling. So I'm very grateful to be healthy. So what are you grateful for?
I think we're drinking the same water, because I was also going to be grateful for my health. And not because I've been sick, but because I haven't been. I actually really feel like I'm in the best shape of my life right now, which is a little, it's weird to say, but I think it's true. And I was thinking back, I don't know if I've ever mentioned this, but, 2 years ago, I actually gained a bunch of weight. I probably gained 15 to 20 pounds, which, because I'm not very tall, that's actually really, a big percentage of me. And I lost it all, and I started just working out. And even if I don't go running, I'll do like the 7-minute workout at home. And I've been starting to eat better. And I just feel like it affects everything, so I'm grateful for my health. I'm grateful for your health too.
Me too. For yours as well.
Thanks. Okay, well, thanks for joining us. You can find me at Planet Alvina on Twitter and at Alvina Ling on Instagram.
And I'm at Pacey Lin on both platforms. And you can also get us on iTunes now.
Yay! Yes, we're finally, you can subscribe. I don't know, I always hear people say this on podcasts, but, you know, rate us in iTunes. Give us 5 stars. I'm Alvina Ling.
And I'm Grace Lin.
Have a great week.
And happy reading!
Bye!